Before the episode starts, I just want you guys to know this is the last episode of the first season of the 20-something experience. So please, you guys, let me know on Instagram what you guys think about this first season. Feel free to message, and I'll be doing a post about the first season, so you can let me know your favorite episodes, your thoughts, and anything else, really. Thank you, guys, and enjoy this episode. I am Daniel Itomi, your host, and welcome to the 20-something Experience podcast, where we listen and learn from the lives and experiences of young adults across the world. Before we start the episode, I just want to say that even though we are not actively protesting on the streets anymore, NSAR's movement is still a thing. We'll still be advocating for a better country, for a better life, for better policing, and the deaths on the 20th of October 2020 will not be forgotten, and we'll continue to keep the government accountable for everything that they do. And in due time, no matter how long it takes, we'll eventually be in a better place. But yeah, enjoy the episode.
At some point in our lives, we all have to apply for jobs. And the process, right, is long. I think if you've applied for a job, you know that it's long and frustrating. And to speak about this entire hectic process is my friend, Folusho.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be on the pod, finally.
I'm happy to have you. For those of you listening that don't know her, she is currently on a training contract. And for people that don't know about law, getting a training contract is extremely difficult. And she's been able to get one because, I mean, she's very clever. Thank God for that. But I used to think getting a job or the entire job like application process was uniquely long in Nigeria, but you then find out that it's literally like it's almost the same everywhere, just that in some places the jobs are more available than others. But for you, what was the job application process like for getting your training contract?
Long, literally. how you described it, extremely long. You know, like you said, really everywhere is the same. Job applications, it's just quite long, to be honest. Can we start with the forms? I don't know how it is in Nigeria, because I haven't applied in Nigeria, but over here, like law, business, because I applied for some, you know, business schemes as well, and it's pretty much the same thing, just really long. And you know, you just have to build resilience because you put so much time and effort, and you know, there's no guarantee that, you know, it's going to be successful or anything, and you just have to keep going because adulting and that, really,
honestly.
So, yeah.
But how hard is it to get a training contract?
So that's the thing. So I think generally, especially for, you know, for those of us, so you have to kind of think of this in from different perspectives, I will say, because those of us that don't have red passports or, you know, any other passports, the process is different.
Yeah.
But I think generally when it comes to training contracts, you know, there are so many law graduates, so many. And, you know, apart from the fact that, you know, they take law graduates, they take anybody. So law firms take anyone at all. There's this course called Graduate Diploma in Law, I think it is, GDL. And essentially it's just for people who didn't study law, and then they do like a 1 year sort of like a crash course, and then you can actually just join in and do the LPC, which is like law school and everything. So you can just imagine having like thousands of people that studied law, and then those that studied other things, knowing that they want to be lawyers. But anyways, there are also people, you know, on the other side that like they, you know, studied something else, and then later on they're like, oh, okay, you know, I want to be a lawyer as well. And they're also applying. So, and then what? They're like, what? How many spots in the firm? And they've got like thousands of applications. So I think just the demand and supply of it really and truly just makes it difficult in that sense to get. So essentially, like, people do the GDL, people have like law degrees, people come from like, you know, so there's just so many people applying for so few places. So I think it's really just the demand and supply of it that just makes it really difficult to get.
So basically, essentially, if I studied engineering, I could apply for a training contract, and if my application is good and everything, I could get it and just do what the diploma.
Yeah. So some people do that.
It's
so some,
mad.
Yeah, I know.
That is such a violation. Like, imagine having the sleepless nights of like essays and seminars and all these things, and like, I just come and, you know, get this. But how many steps of the application for the training contract were there?
So I think it really depends on the firm. So where I work, we didn't have like so many steps. It was pretty much just, so law is quite unique. I don't know, we like to feel like, oh, we're different, everything's always different. It's long, I know, I agree. But usually with legal applications, you have like the application form, which is long. They will ask you like essay questions, or, you know, what was it when during the year I applied, it was stuff like what sort of technological advancements in the legal sector, you know, all sorts of questions. It could be anything. And then you will spend forever researching the firm, researching, you research.
Yeah.
And you'll find the answer. So you could literally find the same question in some, you know, three different law firms, but you can't answer the same because you kind of need to tailor it to each firm. So usually there's that application form, and then some firms in between have them tests. So, you know, the, like, so in law, it's Watson Glaser. That's the main test, like critical thinking.
Yeah.
Then sometimes you see abstract reasoning. I did some abstract, you know, there are all those sequences, theories, fun stuff. But yeah, you see some of those. And sometimes it's, so I think those are the main tests. You know, some do verbal. And then the next step, from there, will take you to like a video interview. Ah,
yeah.
Let me tell you, there was one video interview I did. I did it in my uncle's house. And then like my cousin just walked in on the video interview. Ah, man.
Embarrassing. How old was the cousin?
The kind of tears. To cry, like she's like 8 or so. just destabilized me. I was just, man, that was the end of that application.
Lol, so you didn't get that job.
when they're asking me questions and I'm just frozen, just looking at the door, like, how did this just happen? Yeah, so some do video interviews, and then you have the final stage, which is the assessment center.
Yeah.
So, that's usually it. But for the firm I am currently working in, so my firm, my, someone I can call it.
Yeah.
So that one, it was just application form. Then they put you onto the assessment center. And then during the assessment center, you do the test.
So, oh, okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I like applications like that. They give you a chance to have that face-to-face interaction because of this machine that basically looks for keywords in CVs. I feel like a lot of good candidates are missed out.
Absolutely.
Because the way someone performs face-to-face is like key for you to get the job, because any random person can put the right words in their CV, get through the machine, and they could just go to the assessment center. And it's like, at least yours was the form. Then I'm sure they had the I think it's called, is it ATI or something? That's basically
ATI.
Yeah, I think that's what the machine thing is called. I can't really remember. Okay. But it's
I think it's good and bad in the sense that they have to ultimately, if you have 1,000 people applying for like 2 or 3 jobs, you have to find a way to like curb it, you know.
Yeah.
And I just feel like all these numerical reasoning, kinikon, is just to reduce the amount of people applying, because it's like if you're a fresh graduate and there's nothing in your head about working, it's like, how do you know this is what the kind of person that they want? You're not even that person. Yes, do you get it? Because some people grow into a role.
Absolutely.
And some people are fortunate enough to maybe have worked before, or are just fortunate enough to maybe just have the right set of character traits. But you know, some people might just not have, and they grow into it, and they might end up being probably a better worker, but you can just, I mean, you'll never know, because they probably just did not pass that stage.
Absolutely. Do you know what? We're talking about this recently,
yeah,
and it was pretty much one of the things people brought up, in the sense of like this whole, you know, because these tests, you can't really show yourself, and man, some of these tests, they're a little bit wild. We have to be honest. Exactly what you said. It is just a filtration system. Because I remember the first ever test I did. Ah, man, I can never forget. I don't even know whether I shouldn't call the company. But yeah, it wasn't even a law firm. And it was one of these business schemes, you know, back then when I was doing those applications. And then you just finished the test. I didn't even, as in the keyboard was not even like cold from the typing. Ah, they sent me the rejection email. I was like, wow. I was just like, wow. I'm not even logged off. At least allow me to log off and log back in, for God's sake, man. Like, it was actually, man, honestly.
That is rude. That is a violation. That is rude. Oh my days. So wait, so how many no's did you get before you got that training contract?
My dear. Are we counting?
Just estimate, give us a rough like range.
To be fair, I don't think my case was so bad. How many firms did I have? Maybe like 7.
That's not
no less.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's that
yeah,
is
about 7.
That is
6,
very,
7.
That is actually very firms. Good. Bro. Because some people.
Even more. Yeah, I've heard stories. I remember I met someone back then that was like he had applied to like 50 companies. I was just like, you have to. Bro, you have to have something in you that makes you keep going back, because
you can tell 50? That guy is used to heartbreak.
Fam. I was just like, whoa, that is a lot. That's a lot, you know. And back, you know, to be honest, like I think mine was about 7, 7, 8 before I actually got this one. But then that's just for law firms. Shall we talk about the business game?
Fam, everything.
Okay, everything. I really don't remember much of the business ones, but I know I applied to like at least 5, and I didn't get those tests. Did me dirty.
Yeah,
it didn't work out. But law firms, I know. Yeah, also altogether maybe like 15.
Okay, wow,
that's a lot. That's a lot of notes.
That is. That is actually a hell of a lot. But actually, technically, it's not. It's a lot in the sense that in the number. But for me, when I was applying for my placement, and I think it was just a lot. Like, there was a lot of notes. Some places, right? You just send your CV. 5 minutes later, it's a rejection. And you're just like, wow. And it's like these streets are cold. Like some places, like they're just, you know, some places, like they don't even give, like they give no shits. The question is, do you need a visa? And immediately you just put yes. They've already sent you a rejection.
Yes, very wild. That is wild.
Well, thank you for my internship. Because I was already on the visa, I didn't need like an external visa. So I know I applied to a lot of places. I know I had, because thing about me, one thing I know about myself is that if you get me in a room with any person, I know that I'll most likely, like 9 times out of 10, I'll get the job, because I know that my in-person, like, I'm just very confident about interviews, because thankfully, I don't know, I just managed to hack how to, because I know, like, all these British people, like, there's a way, like, you, like, kind of, you comport yourself, and there are certain things that you should, like, you literally can put on an act during the assessment center or interview, and I guarantee you get the job. Because truthfully, like, most places, what are they looking for in an assessment center? Someone that is a team player, someone that is confident. Do you get someone that that can delegate? Like, you're not the one that's the first to answer, but you're the one that's like, okay, guys, how do you think we should do this? I think you should be doing this. You know, all these leadership things, that's literally what they look for. So I kind of clocked it from the beginning. So when I would be in assessment centers, I'll be like, okay, I think we should divide the task into X, Y, and Z. And so I think it's your goal.
No, that timekeeping one is one of the you know, the ones people jump on. It's like, oh, do you mind if I just, you know, put a timer here? I'm just like, go for it.
Because people clock that. I think being a timekeeper is like one of the easiest tasks, and it's also very important, because they'll say, okay, this person keeps the time, this, but the all of that semantics,
so of leadership,
there's ways around it, you know. But do you know what's shocking, because basically where I work, right, for the last probably like almost last year, I've been working in HR, so I've been on the other side of applications. And I will say that some applicants, right, do not help themselves. Like, how can somebody send me a CV that's a forwarded email of a previous application that he's done? I guarantee, like, you can see the email of the HR person he sent it to. Like, I could see it. So I was just like how does someone do this? Like, in Nigeria, people still, I don't know whether it's, I didn't see it in a lot of it in England, but in Nigeria, people still put their passport pictures in their CV. Like, they put like a picture of themselves, like top left in the middle. They put their gender, their village. Some people put their local government, their date of birth.
To be fair, I feel like these things, we're not taught.
True. School doesn't tell you.
They don't tell you, because I remember when I did my first CV. I mean, I didn't put my picture.
I mean, that one is a no-brainer.
But it's just like, you know, some things that you put in, and if you don't know, you don't.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So it's like, sometimes when I see, like, you know, some CV, and I think in Nigeria, I don't know, I think the whole gender and, you know, full, like, you know, some people even put their state of origin, all of that is more a thing there. So are you telling me, because now me, I'm asking you, are you telling me that that's not acceptable? HR perspective,
I don't think it's in. I would definitely say that I don't think it's like it's a case where if I see it, I'm immediately saying that's a no. But it's like, you don't need to put it. It takes valuable space from your like CV, because ideally you want your CV to be 1 or 2 pages, right? Yeah. So if you put that, you're taking at least a good portion. It could be a quarter of the page that you could put something else there. And the issue is that the unfortunate thing is that most people that put those details in, right, their CVs, like, I think if I just do a rough estimate, 90% of them, their CVs are, I don't want to use the word trash, but they're not good. Like, they're not good enough for the role. So, and the thing is, I don't even think it's an issue of, like them as an individual. I think it's just the system, because not a lot of unis, because even me, when I applied for my internship in my second year of uni, right, I didn't get, like, the uni always would tell you that, oh, if you want to learn about CV and cover letters, go to the career center, blah, 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 blah. And I think we had like one class on CVs and everything. So at least there was an attempt.
there, but it was really when I worked at like Sony, which is where I did my internship, that the HR person was like, okay, this is how you should correct your CV, this is what you need to do, that I now finally changed my CV and everything. And you know, it cannot be the case for a lot of people, because some people, what about people that got rejected? That means they don't know better about what to do with their CVs and what HR people look for. And for people listening, right, let me just tell you straight up, do not put your ethnicity, do not put your date of birth, don't put your, and most importantly, don't put your picture, because I will tell you now, you try to remain as professional as possible, but once you see someone's face and you do not like it, there's an unfortunate unconscious bias that comes up in your head, and you're almost like put off. And obviously for me, when I see it, I always try to remind myself that no, please, focus on their skills, focus on what they have. So I'm like, just don't put it.
Yeah, I just said they're not fine. Wow.
Do you get, like, if they're not fine, if they're like rough looking, you're just like,
I'm so dead.
Because some people, and the issue is that some people, the picture is not like a standard like business picture.
I mean, it's passport.
It's anything.
It's not your best.
Do you get? It could be a passport picture. It could be a random. Some people random selfies. And you know, some people do. You know the uncle and the auntie pose with their selfie camera when they are looking down on it.
No.
Like some people do that, and I'm just like, wow.
Are you serious?
Like people genuinely do not know. So I'm just telling people now, just do not put your picture on the CV unless the application expressively says.
But does it ever?
It never does. It never does. So in case it does,
no need.
But just don't put it, because I've seen.
Yeah.
I would say, like, in fairness to some people, where I there was an IT company I worked in, and there was a project in a specific state in Nigeria, and they wanted only local people, so they did want you to put like your state of origin from. Sorry, your state of origin within it, so that when they see that, oh, you're from this state, then you're suddenly, like, they don't even need to see your skill, because it was, I think it was low-skill jobs that they needed. So they just immediately just kind of, like, put you to the next stage where they would then now look at your skills and whatnot. So in that case...
Are you serious? Based on states of origin?
Yeah, because it's a case where I think that specific project, they wanted to empower, like, the local people. So they were like, okay, to empower the local people. Because, you know, with a lot of some Nigerian projects, they always want a case where the local people are, like, trained and they get jobs and they're employed and everything.
Right.
So they always, like, make it so, because if you don't, there are far more skilled people in other places that would get the job. So it's like, oh, if you want to do a project in our area, you have to empower people. It's like, I think it's more political than it is functional.
Right, right. No, I get what you mean.
Basically, if someone doesn't specifically ask you for your date of birth, things like that, don't put it, because, like I said, unconscious bias just comes up. Like, you don't even know as the HR person when you're reading and you're just like, wow. And when I go through CVs and I'm just like declining, I'm just thinking like, wow, like this is like, this person must be thinking like, how can I get a job then? Because in fairness to us, we say that, okay, we need at least 1 year and it's an entry level role. And that's where, and I see another problem. You have a graduate scheme where the ideal candidate is someone that has had like maybe a job experience before, maybe. But it's like, you're just a graduate, so how can you have like job experience, especially if you're international? Because
fam, that's what I will never understand. It's like we need to get the job to get the experience. So where do we go from here, really?
So,
yeah, no, I completely get you.
Like some jobs, sometimes it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, we need you to have 3 years experience, but we need you to be a graduate. I'm like, how does that work? Like, I can understand if you have maybe a year, because part-time jobs and you add it up and it could add up to a year, but like 3 years, oh, we need 3 years experience working as a business manager. And it's like, and you're just thinking like, where are you even going to get that?
Yeah, and honestly.
But what do you think the role of nepotism has to play in like getting jobs?
Do you mean in Nigeria?
Generally, anywhere.
Generally. Absolutely, 100% can see it every day in Nigeria. But Yeah, to be honest, I will say because, can I really speak on this topic?
Yeah.
Probably not, because I don't really know personally, like, instances of nepotism, but I would imagine that just because of, you know, it's not like, I mean, generally, when it comes to nepotism, it's one of those things that I believe is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, when I asked Nigeria, I was just asking, but even in England, everywhere, I believe it's everywhere. But I think in more organized societies, you can't really get away with too much of it. So, because you kind of have to justify, you know, openly why this person has been hired. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to, like, you know, unlike in Nigeria, where it's like, oh, this senator's niece and nephew, or this person's, you know. So I wouldn't say, I don't really know, to be honest. That's the bottom line. I don't know how much more it's in actual facts, like, it plays. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think it plays a major role, just because, unfortunately, well, I wouldn't say it's unfortunate, because although it's nepotism, it's also a case of referrals. But what you see, unfortunately, is that a lot of unqualified people are given very lucrative jobs, right? That a lot more qualified people deserve. But it's always a case of, I mean, if you're in that position, you would probably do the same thing. Do you get, like, you'd probably, like, refer a family member or a friend, like a good friend, for the job, even whether or not they're qualified. But I think where people find an issue with it, and where I certainly find an issue with it, is where it's just a case of, like, people, the person's not even working, like, they're just there to, like, collect the money. And it's like there are a lot, especially in Nigeria, where there are so many issues with jobs, and people are, even like the most educated people, are still looking for jobs or find it hard because the jobs are not just as available, you know.
No, absolutely. It's really shit, like you said, because unemployment rate is high, and then you're seeing people who clearly don't even know what
to
do. They just sit down, and I think it's more prevalent in government organizations, because there's no private somebody that's gonna pay someone to come and
drink it.
And just relax.
Civil servants, you know, but we'll not get into government workers. Won't get into government workers, because they are a totally different breed altogether. They are just a totally different breed. But that is for another episode.
Honestly. Because that is really where the issue is. You know, you find it's like, even you hear, you know, generally, like, civil service not even a job. Some people have full-time jobs outside of
do you guess? Because you go to the office and you're Netflixing all day and you go back home. That's your day done. Man. Or maybe you eat granola and you, like, it's just it's a mess. It's a mess.
It's a big mess.
But at the same time, I can't blame them, because I mean, government's probably paying you chicken change as well, so far. Might as well.
Are they really paying?
I think a lot of the lower level ones, yes. But arguably, like, it's all arguable, because I don't know the value, so I can't really speak. But I think some of them feel like they're overworked and underpaid. I know what they say: minimum wage, minimum effort. So it's like,
I've never heard that before. But
that's what I heard it. I think I heard it in my, like, internship, because they pay, like, most interns, they'll pay you, like, the minimum. Not every place, but some places they pay the minimum wage. So some of the other people that would be like, yeah, minimum wage, minimum effort, like, what can you really do?
Honestly,
but for people,
honestly, if I don't
for people applying for jobs, right? What are some tips, like, you have for them?
Tips. Firstly, you know, okay, because very recently I attended, like, a law fair, and quite, you know, you have all these aspiring lawyers just asking you, like, you have the key.
Honestly.
Yeah, like, mind you, I don't have the key to it. I'm just we're all just trying to wing it here. Some of us, we don't know how the game just became successful, thanks to God. You know, but definitely tailoring your application is what I've heard.
Yes.
Don't you have to tailor it. You cannot just copy and paste from this firm to that firm and expect that they, you know, it's think about it. It's like, you know, you have so many people toasting you. Just think of, you know, get my analogy. Have so many toasters and, you know, everyone's telling you, oh, Daniel, you're a fine boy, you're this, you're that. It's just, oh, tell me something I don't know.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like there's the general, you have to tailor it and make them know that you want, there's a reason why you want to work here. And it's not just what they've heard before. Oh, you're the best firm, you have good reputation. Okay, cool. Mr. X, Y, and
So,
Z have also told
Jiggers,
me that I'm
like, tell me something I
the
haven't heard.
best. Oh, tell me something else. Yeah, so I think, you know, when you think about it like that, in the sense of when you're prepping your application, you're, you know, not just going for the you know, information on the front page of their website and you call it a day, you know, you go deep. I think it helps because I'm just thinking about it from the recruiter's perspective. Like if I'm reading through applications and everybody wants the job, so everyone's praising you, such, oh, why do you want to work for us? Absolutely great law firm. Oh my gosh. In fact, you won this award in 2018. Like everyone else is probably saying the same thing. And I know obviously you're probably thinking what else to say, but I guess just kind of going deeper to and asking yourself as well, because it's not just the artificial, like what you're telling them is. I think it's also asking yourself, why do I want to work here really? Apart from I just want a job, you know, because it actually helps you to come up with something that sounds real and genuine and all of that kind of jazz. So definitely tailor, like you said, I guess with companies that ask for CVs, I think keep it short. I remember in UCL they used to tell us one page CV
Yep.
is good enough. We don't have too much
No one
to
has the
say. Like
time.
most of us, how many jobs have we worked? And no one has the time really. Like they are going through thousands of applications. So if your thing is looking long, let's be real, we're just human beings. If it's looking long, just decline, just move on. Like, you know. So make it short, make it, you know, punchy. Errors in your, so grammatical
All
errors,
those
spelling
things.
errors. It
Yeah.
sounds obvious. It sounds obvious, but believe you me, I don't know about other like professions, but law, if your comma is not where it's meant to be, that's
Suicide.
automatic rejection. Because one of the things we, you know, they say in law is they're looking for attention to detail, for instance. But I think just generally with applications, you know, you're thinking to yourself like, you know, there's definitely someone else who has spent longer to make sure that their application does not have any errors. So why should I stick with this person who
Exactly.
clearly, you know, didn't care enough, you know, automatic rejection. And you're at home thinking,
Where
wow, like,
did I go
have you
wrong?
spent so long? Bruh, you don't know, is that place that you're supposed to put apostrophe S or be the apostrophe after you put it before?
Honestly,
You don't know, that's the one that ruined your
bro.
whole life. So definitely spelling errors,
People should
grammatical
just
errors,
download
read and
Grammarly.
read.
There's a plugin, I think Grammarly, and it just basically
Does it
it
actually
does,
work?
and like a lot, I use it for everything I do, and it just like
Really?
highlights. Sometimes I think sometimes it misses because the way you want to maybe structure a sentence, it can miss out some little details, but generally, like things like punctuation and all of that, it helps you. Obviously, you still do the work, but at least it will highlight that, oh, you don't have a comma here, you don't have, you didn't use this word properly, and blah 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 blah. So things like that. Also, if you pay for the premium, then it will definitely help you well. But I mean, it's worth it because you only get to send that CV once, you know. And
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, I keep seeing the adverts. I
it definitely
never
works. I
read
suggest it
them
for people because
seriously.
it's also like an assistant. It's an assistant, like second eye, like second review.
Yeah.
Like a exactly. So that after you've read it, someone like it goes over it and he identifies, okay, there's an error here. Sometimes the error might be an unrecognized word that maybe if you're in America, you're using a British version of the word or things like that. It just brings attention to it. But honestly, I think like Felicia said, right? Like you said, the key thing, tailor the applications. Don't waffle on your CV. And I feel like for someone like me, you know, I have my CV is about 2 pages long. And if you have a 2-page CV, in the little place where you put like a little summary, do not put a generic, oh, I'm a hardworking graduate that believes in putting my skills to the test.
Dude, funny thing, you know, over here they're like
you take it out, right? But I feel like some places you leave it in because you just, it's like your cover letter but in 4 lines. Do you guess? Like just put, absolutely. Like for me, I'll put I actually start with like a hardworking but I put like a hardworking young professional, then I literally just go straight into it with 3 years working experience in X, Y, and Z. Done.
Right. Yeah, I think the issue is guessing that those 4 lines to summarize your whole, you know, the tendency to go generic is too high. I think that's why they even just advise take it out completely, because it's kind of difficult to you know, make yourself stand out without just sounding.
It's true. It's true. That's the thing. Everyone puts it like lady. Everyone's hardworking. Everyone's results driven. And but it's ironic because that is also what recruiters want to see. It's like, yeah, okay, don't put it, but we want to see that. So it's like, what the hell do you do?
Yeah, it's a bit tricky. But you can imagine everyone, like you said, it's just like, if you have to read for the umpteenth time that this person is so hardworking and, in fact, is so interested in this line and has all the skills and
it's, you know, long.
It's just the same it's thing long. Over and over.
It's really it's long. And I don't blame... That's why there's a machine to look at it. And ultimately, I think if the truth is that with a lot of places, right, no matter how maybe unavailable the jobs are, right, I think as a candidate, besides maybe extenuating circumstances, like I said, nepotism, some fake job applications that are just there just for the sake of it, I think if people understand more about how to actually apply for a job, in the sense that, like you said, don't use generic applications, put the keywords in, explain yourself well, things like that, I think you'd get more calls for interviews, because a lot of people don't even know that, and it's quite unfortunate. And I was trying to do something where I would help like a lot of NYC people, because they are the ones that I see with the worst CVs, unfortunately, especially the ones that went to the public unions, even some private uni ones too. They don't know jack about how to, like, because do you get
it? It's so unfortunate. Even
NYSC is so dumb, right? That they'll teach you skills acquisition, right? And they will not teach you a relevant skill in today's world. They'll teach you carpentry, welding, bricklaying. Like, wait, what? The thing is, I would understand if you taught that to people that didn't go to school. But these are graduates of things like mass communication, psychology, law. You're teaching them bricklaying. Yep. The IT that they're teaching you is how to type. And I know that a lot of people need those skills, but the point of everything I'm saying anyway is that I think if you're fortunate enough to have access to the internet, right, you should take the time and just understand how to just apply for jobs. Because once you can tailor yours, because a lot of people are lazy and don't want to tailor their CV to each application.
Yeah, you have to do the research. You can't escape.
There's no shortcuts. Do the research. And people can tell. Like, I can tell when somebody has researched the company and what they write in their cover letter. Like, I can tell. You don't have to say anything deep, but I can just tell. And the easiest thing, what I always tell people, is that if the company has like a mission or vision, just put it in somewhere in your cover letter, or you can paraphrase it. Because once someone sees that, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Don't
like
copy and paste.
But just basically, because the truth is that no one really reads the cover letter anyway. Like, no one does. Like, I kid you not. I do not think, like, I would only read a cover letter if I have the time, in the sense that if I'm just, maybe I'm like, okay, let me just look at this cover letter and see. But I don't read, like, word for word. I skim through it. And what I know what I'm looking right. for. I'm looking for something that relates to the job. So if you say that, if it's a business development job and you're like, oh yeah, I got business development skills doing X, Y, and Z, my eyes would gravitate towards then. I'll read the sentence, and if it's dead, reject. But if it's something, yeah. okay, this is something you can work with, you then move on. So people just know that sometimes it might just be as simple as just putting the job role in maybe like the first paragraph or the second paragraph. Or
I think waffling, you identified waffling. I think that's definitely something people need to reduce, because you need to realize
exactly no time. Need for
there's
like
one on this podge that is pretty like, much no, telling you he doesn't like, read your cover letter.
No need for jargon from like none of that. It's like, just put, even if you want to use jargon, need. Just put the your experience and how it's relevant to the job. And honestly, I think what people also need to know is that you're not just like giving, you're not just like going to a company. The company is also going to put things inside of you. So do not apply, go to a company that you will not gain anything from. Some people would be in, maybe they want to pursue psychology, but they will now use their psychology CV and apply to like an IT company. And it's like, we're not going to do anything like for you. Do you get? And not in the sense that you, it's mad. It's just mad.
Yeah, that's you raise a very valid point, because transferable skills, that's the most important thing. So even in CVs, you know, going back to CVs, you have to ensure that you highlight those skills that you can transfer, because obviously you might not have like relevant experience in that particular field. Say, you know, you're applying for, I don't know, an IT job and all of that. So obviously, no, probably not, let me not use IT, because that's quite usually you kind of need the IT skills. But let's say I'm applying for even just a law firm, actually, you know, and I've worked in Zara, I've worked in I don't know, Tesco, you know, because someone like me, it's not like I had like, I've worked in like a law firm before. It was just internships here and there, and never in a law firm. So it was pretty much just kind of like pulling out those skills, like, okay, so in Zara, what was I doing?
Exactly.
What sort of skills did I get? Maybe I interacted with customers. How's that going to, you know, help me at this job? So it's not enough to say, oh, I worked at Zara. Okay, cool. What next? I could, you know, let's even forget about Zara. I could even pick up like a, you know, professional sort of role. You know, say I did 2 weeks at like, I don't know, KPMG, but then I don't pull out the skills that I learned. You know, the law firm's gonna be like, okay, so what do I do with this information? You know, so it's all about transferable skills. It's all about highlighting, okay, you know, I might not have relevant experience here, but I've done other things and I can bring those skills on board to help me
exactly in a nutshell.
So I think that's definitely something, even in CV, you know, on your CV, because I back then in UCL, that's where I got my own CV training, because up until all those times in Surrey when they used to invite us
Z no one went
CV, I did not go. I did not go. Mine was to just go to class. Like, that was already too much stuff. But UCL, they forced us. We actually had like a module called careers development or whatever. So, and it wasn't optional. So you had to go. So, you know, that was when they sort of started telling us about CVs and everything. So if you, another tip for CVs, I will say, is anything you can put in, you can measure. So anything you can put in like percentage form. So example, you know, say you were a sales rep and you were able to increase sales in your company by 20%.
Exactly.
Put that 20% there. Like, you know, those catchy things. It's not about describing the role, you know, it's not also like describing what you did. It's about showing, you know, what skills you
exactly.
got out
and be able to back. If you put anything you put, be able to back it. If you put, I helped the company acquire a big account, be able to say what you did and practice like what you want to say, because some, like our place, it's like send your application, your CV, cover letter, then you get invited for an interview. It's pretty quick. For smaller companies, that's usually how it is. For bigger ones, you usually have to do a test just because you get hundreds and 200s of applications.
But yeah, guys, there you have it. There are so many tips for job applications, and honestly, we all should actually do a little research so that we can avoid extremely tragic application processes, because there's nothing in an application that I believe that we cannot do, whether it's a psychometric test or it's a video interview or anything. We just have to be duly prepared, and I think we can blame school, we can blame the government, we can blame so many things for not being educated enough on this, but it is now our responsibility to, you know, educate ourselves. Let's put the power back in our hands and hopefully we'll all get the jobs that we desire. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please don't forget to like, share, and comment on this.